Welcome to the deep dive. You're here because you want to really get a handle on the things that matter.
Absolutely.
And after a liver transplant, knowing your medications, that matters a lot.
That's true. And today we're going to give you that solid understanding. You can think of this as like a guided tour through the medications that become so important after a liver transplant.
Perfect.
We've got this fantastic collection of information, actually inspired by Dr. Puneet Dargan's concept of know your medicine, and really well put together by Dr. Tanuja Malik, who is a specialist in, well, she's an anesthesiologist and critical care specialist, focusing specifically on liver transplants.
Great.
So we've distilled it all down so you don't have to wade through, you know, pages and pages of medical journals and articles. We've got the essentials for you right here.
Our mission today is simple. We want to empower you. We want you to understand what each of your medications does,
right,
and why it's so important for your success after a liver transplant. Right. And we're going to talk about this in a way that makes sense without getting bogged down in, you know, the complicated medical jargon.
Exactly. No medical school required.
Right. We're going to make this accessible.
Absolutely.
So to be clear, we're focusing on the medications you'll be taking by mouth.
Yes.
At home, on an ongoing basis. We're not talking about IV medications you get in the hospital. This is for, you know, months, years, potentially for life.
Correct.
So by the end of this, what are you going to walk away with? Well, for one, you're going to have a much clearer understanding of the names of your medications, both generic and brand names.
Okay.
You're going to know what each one does, like what it's doing in your body. You're going to know the potential side effects, so you know what to look out for.
Mm-hmm.
Understand some key drug interactions.
Yes.
And really, you're going to feel more confident knowing when it's important to contact your doctor.
Absolutely. And that's so important.
Right.
It's not just about knowledge. It's about feeling in control.
Right. Exactly.
As you move forward in your journey.
So let's dive in. We're going to start by taking a look at some of the medications that might be part of your treatment even before you have the surgery.
Yeah. So before the liver transplant itself, right?
Right.
And that's important because sometimes, you know, managing complications of liver disease, even before you get to the transplant, can really improve your overall health.
Right.
And your outcomes mm-hmm. and medications are a vital part of that pre-transplant phase.
Makes sense. So first on the list, we've got rifaximin, also known as Rifagoot.
Yes.
Now, this one's interesting. Its main job is to prevent something called hepatic encephalopathy.
Right.
Can you break that down for us?
So hepatic encephalopathy, it sounds very complicated, but it really is a condition where if your liver isn't functioning properly, it can lead to a buildup of toxins in your bloodstream. And these toxins can actually affect your brain function.
Wow.
And so rifaximin, what it does is it specifically targets the bacteria in your gut that are producing a lot of ammonia.
Mm.
So, you know, bacteria in our gut are a natural part of our digestive system, but they produce ammonia as a byproduct. Now, in someone with liver disease, the liver may not be able to clear that ammonia effectively. So rifaximin steps in and it reduces the number of these kind of ammonia-producing bacteria in your gut.
Okay, so it's like a little cleanup crew in your intestines.
Exactly.
Okay, so what are some things people might experience if they're taking rifaximin? Side effects.
The common things that people report are gas
mm-hmm.
and maybe some nausea.
Okay.
Also, it's important to note that it can potentially reduce the effectiveness of warfarin,
uh-huh.
which is a medication used to thin the blood. So if you're on both, your doctor's likely going to be monitoring your warfarin levels very closely.
All right, so next up we have lactulose. You might see it as Lubusos or Duflac.
Right.
Now, this one also focuses on ammonia.
Yes.
But it seems like it has a different approach.
Yeah. So lactulose is actually a type of sugar that your body doesn't absorb very well. And as it moves through your digestive system, it pulls water into the bowel. And that softens the stool and makes you go to the bathroom more often.
Oh, okay.
And the more you go, the more ammonia your body gets rid of. So it's kind of like rifaximin is reducing the production, and lactulose is helping with the removal.
Interesting. Okay. So a potential side effect would be, you know, going to the bathroom more often.
Yes. Diarrhea and sometimes bloating can be quite common as your body adjusts.
Okay.
And a simple interaction to keep in mind is that if you're using lactulose with other laxatives, that could lead to, you know, too much fluid loss.
Right. That makes sense.
So that's generally something to avoid.
So moving on, we have spironolactone, brand name Aldactone.
Okay.
And this one is used to treat ascites, which is, you know, that buildup of fluid in the abdomen.
Right. And that can be really uncomfortable
Oh, yeah.
for patients.
Yeah.
So Basically, when the liver's not functioning properly, it can lead to this fluid retention, and spironolactone is what we call a potassium-sparing diuretic.
Okay.
Or a water pill. And it helps your body get rid of that excess fluid, but it tries to hold on to potassium, so it's sparing potassium. However, it can sometimes cause potassium levels to get too high.
Mm-hmm.
So your doctor will be checking your blood to make sure that's not happening. Men might also notice some breast changes as a side effect.
Okay, that's an important detail. And are there any medications that spironolactone doesn't interact well with?
It's generally recommended to avoid using it with ACE inhibitors,
okay,
which are a common type of blood pressure medication. And that's because that combination can also increase the risk of potassium levels getting too high.
Right. So next on our list, we've got another diuretic, furosemide, more commonly known as Lasix.
Right.
And this one is described as being a more potent diuretic.
Yes. It's very effective at helping the body get rid of extra water. And because it's stronger in terms of fluid removal, the side effects can include dehydration.
Right.
And also the possibility of your potassium levels dropping too low, which is the opposite of what we saw with spironolactone. So again, monitoring is really important.
What about interactions with other medications?
So NSAIDs, which are your non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, things like ibuprofen or naproxen that you take for pain, they can actually reduce how well furosemide works.
Wow.
And there's also a risk that taking them together can put extra strain on your kidneys. So that's a really important interaction to be aware of, especially if you're trying to manage pain.
Right. And we also have torsemide on the list.
Yes.
Or DTOR as another option for managing this fluid overload. Are the key things to know about this one similar to furosemide?
In many ways, yes.
Okay.
So torsemide also helps the body get rid of excess fluid. And like furosemide, it can lead to dehydration and low potassium levels.
Mm.
One specific interaction to be aware of with torsemide is that it may increase the risk of toxicity from digoxin.
Okay.
Which is a medication sometimes used for heart conditions. So if you're on digoxin, your doctor will be particularly mindful of that.
All right. So tolvaptan, brand name, Tolvat, has a different role. It's used to help increase sodium levels in cases of hyponatremia.
Correct.
So basically when sodium in the blood is too low, so why would that be necessary in someone with liver disease?
Well, sometimes with advanced liver disease, the body's fluid balance can get really disrupted, and that can lead to kind of a dilution of sodium in the blood. So tolvaptan works by blocking a hormone that causes water retention.
Interesting.
And by doing that, it allows the kidneys to get rid of water without losing as much sodium.
Okay.
Which can help raise that concentration in the blood. But it is a medication that needs careful monitoring.
Right.
You might feel more thirsty. And there's a potential, rarely, but there is a potential, for liver problems.
Uh-huh.
And it also interacts with certain medications called CYP3A4 inhibitors, which basically, CYP3A4 is an enzyme in the liver that's really important for breaking down a lot of drugs.
Right.
So if it's inhibited, the levels of tolvaptan can get too high in your system, so those inhibitors should generally be avoided.
All right, so midodrine, or Gutron, is used for raising blood pressure in hepatorenal syndrome.
Yes.
What exactly is going on in the body in that situation?
So hepatorenal syndrome is a very serious complication where the kidney function declines in people with very advanced liver disease.
Okay.
And one of the symptoms can be very low blood pressure.
Wow.
So midodrine is a medication that actually acts on your blood vessels, causing them to constrict or narrow. And that constriction helps to increase the blood pressure. Now, side effects can include a tingling sensation. And obviously, if it's not managed carefully, it could make your blood pressure go too high.
Right.
And it's also not recommended to take it with a type of antidepressant medication called MAOIs.
All right. So vitamin E, also known as Evian, is mentioned for antioxidant support in liver damage and NAFLD. Is this a supplement everyone with liver issues should consider?
Not necessarily. So while vitamin E is an antioxidant, and it might have a role in certain liver conditions, like non-alcoholic fatty liver disease or NAFLD, it's really important to talk to your doctor before starting any new supplements.
Okay.
Because high doses of vitamin E can potentially increase your risk of bleeding.
Ooh.
And if you're taking blood thinners like warfarin, that risk can be even higher. So it's always best to get professional guidance before starting any new supplements.
All right. Next, we have acetylcysteine.
Okay.
Or Mucomix, which is also listed as having antioxidant properties for the liver.
Yes.
Particularly in cases of acute liver failure.
Yes. Acetylcysteine is a key medication in treating acute liver failure, especially if it's caused by an overdose of acetaminophen.
Okay.
So acetaminophen is the active ingredient in Tylenol.
Got it.
And acetylcysteine helps to protect the liver cells from further damage and can actually help them recover. Side effects can include nausea and vomiting, sometimes a rash. And it's important to know that it can sometimes interact with certain antibiotics. It might interfere with their effectiveness. So the doctors will be very mindful of the timing if both are needed.
All right. Sucralfate, brand name Sucral.
Mm-hmm.
This one is for preventing ulcers, particularly when someone's on steroids.
Right.
So why does steroid use increase the risk of ulcers?
Well, steroids, which are often used after a transplant to help prevent rejection because they suppress the immune system, they can irritate the lining of the stomach and the intestines, and that can make ulcers more likely. So sucralfate works by forming this sort of protective barrier, like a coating, over those surfaces to help prevent those ulcers.
Interesting.
Now, it can cause constipation as a side effect.
Okay.
And importantly, it can interfere with how your body absorbs many other medications. It's usually recommended to take it at a different time than your other pills.
Okay.
Typically about an hour before or 2 hours after other meds.
So B-complex vitamins with higher doses of thiamine and magnesium, for instance, Altamax, is mentioned for preventing Wernicke's encephalopathy in people with alcoholic liver disease. Can you break that down for us?
Okay, so Wernicke's encephalopathy is a serious neurological condition that can happen in individuals with chronic alcohol use.
Okay.
And it's due to a deficiency in certain B vitamins, particularly thiamine, which is vitamin B1.
Okay.
So this particular combination aims to replenish those essential nutrients.
Yeah.
And side effects are rare, maybe some nausea.
Uh-huh.
But because they're basically replenishing what's missing, there aren't a lot of drug interactions to worry about.
Got it. All right. So now we're getting into medications used to suppress the hepatitis B virus.
Yes.
We've got tenofovir.
Right.
Which is tenohepariccovir.
Okay.
And ticavir, which is entavir or exvir.
Mm-hmm.
And then tenofovir alafenamide or TAF. Why are there so many different options?
Well, these are all antiviral medications that are very effective at suppressing the hepatitis B virus, which, as you know, can cause significant liver damage.
Right.
The differences are really in the side effects and some of their interactions. So the older versions of tenofovir might have a slightly higher chance of affecting kidney function and bone density in some individuals, whereas the newer formulation, the tenofovir alafenamide, or TAF, is generally considered to be easier on the kidneys.
Got it.
And ticavir is another very effective option.
Okay.
It's important to note that with tenofovir, you want to avoid other medications that could harm the kidneys.
Right.
And ticavir has fewer interactions, but it shouldn't be taken with other antiviral medications for Hep B.
Okay.
TAF can interact with some drugs like rifampin, which is used to treat tuberculosis, and some anticonvulsant medications. So your doctor will choose the most appropriate medication based on your health and other medications you're taking.
Makes sense. And lastly, on our pre-transplant medication list, we have ciprofloxacin, which is also known as Ciprox, and Norfloxus, also known as Norflox, and these are listed for SBP prophylaxis.
Right.
What is that?
SBP stands for spontaneous bacterial peritonitis.
Oh, okay.
And it's an infection of the fluid that can accumulate in the abdomen. So remember ascites.
Right.
That fluid buildup.
Yeah.
So SBP is an infection of that fluid.
Wow.
Ciprofloxacin and norfloxacin are antibiotics that can be used to prevent that infection, especially in people who've had it before. Common side effects of ciprofloxacin can include tendinitis and some stomach upset, and norfloxacin might cause dizziness and a rash. Both of these antibiotics can interact with antacids and a medication called theophylline, which is sometimes used for respiratory conditions.
Okay, so that was a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of medications.
It is.
But it's really important to know what's happening before the transplant. Now let's switch gears.
Absolutely.
We talk about what happens after, because there's another whole set of medications.
Right, and these are really crucial after the transplant to make sure that new liver thrives and doesn't get rejected by your body.
Right, so leading the charge, it looks like we've got tacrolimus, which you might see as Prograf, Pangraf, or Advograf. This is like the big one, right?
Absolutely. This is a very important medication.
Okay.
Tacrolimus is an immunosuppressant medication.
Okay.
And its job is to prevent your immune system from attacking your new liver.
Right.
Because your immune system is very powerful, it's designed to protect you from foreign invaders. But in this case, We don't want it to see the new liver as a foreign invader.
Right. We want it to accept it.
Exactly. So tacrolimus kind of, you know, calms down the immune system.
Okay.
Prevents it from attacking that new liver. Now, it's a very effective medication, but it does have potential side effects.
Like what?
Well, it can affect the kidneys and sometimes cause tremors.
Okay.
But what's really important to understand about tacrolimus is that it has a lot of drug interactions.
Oh, okay.
One very famous one is with grapefruit juice, which can significantly increase the levels of tacrolimus in your blood, and that can lead to some serious side effects.
Wow.
A lot of other medications, including antibiotics and antifungals, can also affect tacrolimus levels, either making them too high or too low. So your doctor will be monitoring your levels very closely through blood tests to make sure you have just the right amount in your system.
Okay.
And taking it consistently at the same time each day is really crucial.
Got it.
So think of tacrolimus as the cornerstone of preventing rejection, and consistency is key.
Okay, another immunosuppressant on the list is mycophenolate mofetil, Cellcept or Mycept. How does this one work to prevent rejection?
Mycophenolate mofetil also works to dampen down the immune system, but it does it through a different way than tacrolimus does.
Interesting.
So common side effects can include diarrhea and a lowering of your white blood cell count, which can make you more prone to infections.
Okay, so this is a big one to keep an eye on.
Yes, absolutely. And one significant interaction is with antacids, which you might take for heartburn, and they can actually reduce how well mycophenolate mofetil is absorbed.
Oh, wow.
So it might make it less effective, so it's generally recommended to take them at different times.
Right, and we've also got everolimus, brand name Certican, which is mentioned as being used for something called renal-sparing immunosuppression.
Yeah.
What is that?
So because some immunosuppressants, like tacrolimus, can sometimes have effects on the kidneys over time, everolimus is sometimes used in combination with lower doses of other immunosuppressants.
Okay.
So the idea is to try to protect the kidneys as much as possible.
Okay, so sparing the kidney. Yeah.
Exactly, renal sparing.
Got it.
But, of course, everolimus has its own potential side effects.
Such as?
Things like mouth ulcers and a delay in wound healing.
Oh, wow.
It also interacts with tacrolimus, so the doses of both medications may need to be adjusted very carefully.
Got it. So, moving on, we're no longer just talking about the body rejecting the new liver. Now we're talking about preventing infections.
Right, which makes sense because, you know, your immune system is suppressed.
Right.
So you're more vulnerable.
So we've got Valganza clover, or Valsite, which is for preventing CMV infection.
Yeah.
What is CMV?
CMV stands for cytomegalovirus.
Okay.
And it's actually a very common virus. A lot of people have been exposed to it. And if you have a healthy immune system, it usually doesn't cause any problems.
Okay.
But in people who have weakened immune systems, like after a transplant,
right,
CMV can reactivate or you can get a new infection, and that can cause some complications.
Okay.
So Valganza clover is an antiviral medication that helps to prevent that from happening. A potential side effect is a decrease in your blood cell counts.
Got it.
And it's usually not recommended to take Valganza clover with other medications that can also suppress the bone marrow, which is where blood cells are made.
All right. And we've also got sulfamethoxazole trimethoprim, Septrin or Bactrim, for preventing pneumocystis jirovecii pneumonia.
Right.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful.
Okay.
But pneumocystis jirovecii is a type of fungus that can cause a serious lung infection.
Okay.
Especially in people with weakened immune systems.
Right.
So this combination antibiotic is used preventatively.
Got it.
Possible side effects include a rash and a decrease in platelets in the blood.
Okay.
And it's important to know that it can increase the effect of warfarin, the blood thinner, which can lead to a higher risk of bleeding.
Got it.
So your doctor will be watching that closely if you're on both.
And then there are several antifungal medications listed.
Yes.
We have fluconazole or Flucose,
right.
Posaconazole, Cocosacil or Posanot.
Okay.
Isavuconazole, Cresemba or Isoconazole.
Yes.
A lot of options here. Why?
Well, because different types of fungal infections can be a risk after transplant.
Okay.
And these medications all have different strengths.
Right.
They're effective against different types of fungi. So fluconazole is often used as a general preventative.
Okay.
But it can interact with tacrolimus by increasing its levels in the blood, so your doctor may need to adjust the dose.
Got it.
Fluconazole is a stronger antifungal and is often used in patients who are at higher risk for more serious fungal infections.
Okay.
And it can significantly raise the levels of both tacrolimus and everolimus. So again, careful monitoring and dose adjustments are needed.
Right.
Isavuconazole is another option for treating those more invasive fungal infections. And again, it can also affect tacrolimus levels.
Okay.
And side effects can vary a bit. So fluconazole can sometimes cause your liver enzymes to go up. Posaconazole might cause nausea and liver issues, and isavuconazole can lead to diarrhea and low potassium levels. So the choice of antifungal really depends on your individual risk and the protocols at your transplant center.
And then we've got clotrimazole.
Yes.
As candid mouth paint, this is like a more localized antifungal treatment.
Yeah, exactly. So clotrimazole mouth paint is used to treat oral thrush.
Okay.
Which is a fungal infection that can happen in the mouth. Mm-hmm. It's applied directly to the affected area.
Got it.
And typically has minimal interactions with other medications. It might cause a bit of irritation in the mouth, but generally not a lot of interaction problems.
All right, so moving on, now we're talking about preventing blood clots.
Yes.
And we've got quite a list here. We've got aspirin, low-dose eicosapirin, enoxaparin or clexane, fondaparinux or Eryxtra,
okay,
rivaroxaban, also known as Xarelto,
right,
apixaban, also known as Eliquis,
yes,
and then warfarin. So many options. Why?
Well, managing the risk of blood clots is a really important part of care after a transplant.
Okay.
Especially in the blood vessels that are supplying the new liver.
Okay, makes sense.
So aspirin, in a low dose, can help prevent clots from forming.
Uh-huh.
A potential side effect is that it can irritate the stomach lining.
Okay.
And it can increase the risk of bleeding if it's taken with other medications that send the blood.
Got it.
Now, enoxaparin and fondaparinux are often used right after surgery to help prevent clots. Enoxaparin can cause bleeding and a decrease in platelets in the blood, and it shouldn't be used with NSAIDs.
Okay.
Fondaparinux also carries a risk of bleeding, can cause reactions at the injection site, and it may raise liver enzymes.
Okay.
It should be avoided with other anticoagulants and NSAIDs as well.
Got it.
Rivaroxaban and apixaban are newer oral anticoagulants that are sometimes used.
Okay.
Rivaroxaban can cause bleeding, dizziness, fatigue, and elevated liver enzymes.
Wow.
It should be avoided with strong inhibitors of a liver enzyme called CYP3A4 and also other anticoagulants and SAIDs.
Okay.
Apixaban has similar risks, including bleeding, bruising, nausea, and elevated liver enzymes, and should be avoided with other blood thinners, strong CYP3A4 inhibitors, and used cautiously with NSAIDs.
Okay.
Warfarin is a more traditional anticoagulant. It's been around for a long time.
Right.
It also helps prevent blood clots, but it requires regular blood tests to check something called INR to make sure the dose is correct.
Right.
Warfarin has a lot of interactions with other medications, including antibiotics, antifungals, and NSAIDs. And it's also important to be consistent with your intake of vitamin K from foods, because that can affect how warfarin works.
Wow, a lot of things to keep track of.
Yeah, so the specific choice of anticoagulant will depend on your risk factors and what your transplant center prefers.
All right, so we also have some medications listed for managing blood pressure.
Right, blood pressure management is very important.
So we have amlodipine, or amlopras, and then we have metoprolol, also known as Betaloc, or Metalar.
Yes.
So why are these commonly needed after a liver transplant?
Well, high blood pressure is actually quite common after a liver transplant. And it can often be a side effect of some of those immunosuppressant medications.
Oh, interesting.
So amlodipine helps to relax your blood vessels, which lowers your blood pressure. Potential side effects can include swelling, particularly in the ankles, and headaches.
Okay.
And it's worth noting that amlodipine can potentially increase the levels of tacrolimus.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs to be watched closely. Now, metoprolol is what we call a beta blocker. And it also helps to lower blood pressure and slow down the heart rate.
Okay.
Side effects can include fatigue or feeling like your heart rate is slow.
Okay.
The effects of metoprolol can add to other blood pressure medications, so that combination needs to be managed carefully.
Right, and we also have insulin listed.
Yes.
For managing steroid-induced diabetes. We talked about steroids earlier, but how do they cause high blood sugar?
Right, so as we discussed, steroids are often necessary to suppress the immune system after a transplant.
Mm-hmm.
But one of their side effects is to increase glucose or sugar in the blood.
Okay.
And this can lead to what we call steroid-induced diabetes, where the body's not able to regulate blood sugar as effectively.
Right.
So in these cases, insulin, which helps lower blood sugar, might be needed.
Okay.
And the main potential side effect of insulin is low blood sugar.
Right.
And this interaction with other medications that lower blood sugar needs to be carefully monitored to make sure that doesn't happen.
And finally, we see calcium shell call for bone health.
Yes.
Why is this so important, maintaining bone health after a transplant?
Well, the long-term use of steroids, which are often necessary, can have a negative impact on your bone density.
Okay.
And increase the risk of osteoporosis, or weakening of the bones.
Right.
So calcium supplements are often recommended to help support that bone health.
Okay.
A common side effect of calcium can be constipation.
Got it.
And it's also important to know that calcium can reduce how well your body absorbs thyroid medication.
Oh, wow.
So if you're on thyroid medication, it's usually recommended to take the calcium at a different time of day.
So that's, wow, that was a lot. That's a really comprehensive overview of so many medications.
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, it really highlights how complex this medication plan can be.
Absolutely.
So big picture, what are the absolute key things you would want our listener to take away from this deep dive?
I think the most important thing is to remember that understanding your medications is essential. It's not just helpful, it's really essential.
Right.
For successful recovery and for preventing complications down the road.
Right.
Consistency is absolutely key, especially with those immunosuppressants, the tacrolimus, the mycophenolate.
Yeah, right.
Taking them at the right times every single day is absolutely crucial to prevent rejection. Think of it as, you know, your body needs to have this ongoing conversation with the new liver. And the medications help to ensure that conversation is peaceful.
That's a great analogy. And what about things the listener should be paying attention to in their own body? Like, how do they know if something's not right?
It's crucial to be really aware of potential side effects. If you experience anything new, anything that seems to be getting worse, things like, you know, unexplained fatigue, swelling, dizziness, any kind of bleeding or bruising that seems unusual, or really any changes that concern you, please reach out to your doctor or your transplant team.
Right.
Because early detection and management can make a huge difference.
And this might seem like common sense, but it bears repeating. What about starting any new medications, even over-the-counter stuff?
Absolutely not, without talking to your doctor first.
Okay. Expert speaker.